This episode is sponsored by Tunbridge Accountants. Are you a creative entrepreneur looking for financial support? Do you need clarity around your numbers or help with decisions related to your business finances? Do you even know what all the numbers mean? Before I worked with Tunbridge Accountants, I definitely didn't. Wendy and Lawton are not just accountants, they're your partners in navigating the complexities of business finance. They make VAT, corporation tax, cash flow management, all of this really simple, guiding you through all the decisions you need to make, whether that's company purchase, setting up a new business, whether to register as a business. Wendy and Lawton can give you really honest, practical advice on everything. And by letting them take care of your business finances, it then frees you up to focus on what you do best, creating and selling your products. So thank you again to Tunbridge Accountants for sponsoring this podcast.
Welcome to the Bring Your Product Ideas to Life podcast. Practical advice and inspiration to help you create and sell your own physical products. Here's your host, Vicky Weinberg.
Emily Goodall is the founder and director of Bundlebean. It's grown from a one product concept to a small business that sells a range of travel products for babies and wheelchair users. They're best known for their adaptable and practical waterproof covers that are sold all over the world. So Emily, thank you so much for being here today.
You're very welcome. Happy to be here.
Thank you. And can we please start by you giving an introduction to yourself, your business and what you sell, please?
Yeah, certainly. So my name is Emily and I started Bundlebean 10 and a half years ago when my two kids were little. They were 3 and 1. I was a young mum living in a flat. We were very short on space. We were very short on money. We were very short on time, probably like lots of young parents. And we lived on a very small top floor flat. And I just am the sort of person who has to be outside. And I used to get desperate to get out and about just to stop me going completely mad in a confined space with two little ones. And I just became so frustrated with all the kind of kit and the caboodle and lugging pushchairs downstairs. Very quickly, I started using a sling for the little one. Anyway, it occurred to me somewhere along this route that I, in those sort of early months, that there must be a simpler way to keep my kids both warm and dry. And that was where we began with Bundlebean Go, which is our sort of original hero product. And the idea was that it was warm, and it was waterproof, and it could adapt to go on the stroller, the car seat, the sling, whatever you had to do, however your day unfolded, whoever was screaming, whoever needed to be carried, would go in the buggy, wouldn't, whatever happened, you were going to have babies who are warm and dry. It literally began. I made one at home very badly on the sewing machine. And from there, I just sort of networked and found a factory and found retailers who were interested. And so what began as a kind of hobby on my maternity leave has grown now 10 and a half years later into a sort of multinational company with a whole range of other products. So that's sort of where it all started. So now I am obviously still running the company. I now live in a much larger house, I'm happy to report, with a bit more space, two great big galumphing teenagers. And I live now in the Wiltshire countryside. Still running the business and, expanding every year, our range and our reach and all the rest of it.
Thank you so much for that overview, Emily. Do you think you could describe what your products look like for us? Because obviously this isn't a visual platform and it will just help people get an idea of what you sell.
Yes, certainly. So Bundlebean Go has a waterproof outer layer and it's backed in fleece. It is 90 centimetres by 60. And it can go from being completely opened out flat, so you can use it waterproof side down as a little mat, somewhere to lay your baby. Perhaps you're in the park and your baby wants to have a wriggle about in the sun on a slightly damp lawn. Or you can use it for a quick nappy change on the go. And then up each edge, there is a zip. You zip up the sides and it forms an elasticated section, which then hooks over the legs when you're in stroller. or car seat over a sling. The two straps, there are two elastic straps that can adapt to fit it onto any single application. It also rolls up really small and stuffs in its own little bag. So when you're out and about, it fits into a tiny little stuff bag. So that is the go. Of course, there is now a whole other range of other things as well. But that's where we began.
Thank you so much for that, Emily. As I said to you before we started recording, I think this just sounds like such an amazing product, and it's definitely something I wish that I knew about when I first became a parent.
Well, it's really useful because you can use it on every different application. It also extends as they get older. So you start off with a newborn with the sides right up top, and then it will extend all the way through to 3-4 years old when they're at that age where they're still kind of occasionally hopping in and out of the pushchair. You know, they're quite happy to walk, but all of a sudden they get exhausted and they want to hop in, you know, for the walk home from the park or whatever. So it will, it has a very long lifespan. We find also they get handed on to younger siblings or onto nieces and nephews, friends. You know, I meet mums who say, oh, this is on its 11th user. You know, it was my mum, it was my sister-in-law's, and they're now it's come to me and it's gone through all my kids and they're still working. So they're a real investment for $34.99, you know, it will last forever and be useful for a whole range of things.
So coming right back to the beginning of your story, Emily, were you looking to produce a product that you would, you know, be able to sell and be used by a lot of people? Or at the time, were you just looking to create a product that met the need that you had at that point in time?
Well, so at the outset, I thought this is... Well, obviously, it was my own need, which is probably like all the best inventions. It's from a, you know, it's from your own need and your own difficult situation. What was interesting is I thought this was going to be the solution to everything. This is going to be, you know, every parent in the world can need one of these. And after a year or so, I realised lots of parents wanted this and needed it. But actually, there was an opportunity for other products, and that's when we expanded our range to have we now have a range specifically to support sling wearing, so bigger, wider, longer with a hood for the baby, because we realized that actually some parents are carrying their kids way beyond the sort of newborn years, and so we needed something bigger and longer to support that. Obviously that sort of trend has really expanded even in the years since we've been up and running. That's now much more mainstream, so I think the thing is, never assume that you've nailed it in one hit. You might well find you need more than one product. Also, it's much easier to go into the market with a range of offerings for different retailers, different customers. We also found that we sold a lot in the autumn and winter, but we didn't have an offering for the warmer weather, so we have a lightweight range now as well, which is sort of nearly the same thing. It's a very similar concept. It's just a very thin waterproof layer, a bit like a Mac, rather than your big waterproof winter coat stuffed down into a tiny little bag. And that just means that it extends our range for the whole year, and also for countries abroad where they might experience heavy rain but not the cold weather, the monsoon type countries. So we're always listening, adapting and expanding our offering. So that was a really interesting lesson. Like I say, we thought we'd nailed it with this one thing, but actually, of course, that's nonsense. There's a lot of different things. Every year we add to our range.
Thank you. It definitely makes sense to me to come out with one product, as you need to start somewhere, and then to expand your range, especially it sounds like your range has expanded to meet the needs of your customers.
Yeah, absolutely. What was really useful in the early years was exhibiting at shows and events and actually meeting the customers. Because nowadays, everything is so online. And even back in the early days, you know, we went through retailers. So I didn't have that many opportunities to actually meet the customer and actually speak to them because, you know, you don't. I'm in my office and everything happens without me. But so that was really, really useful to actually meet customers, especially as my kids started to get older and I was sort of out of the baby zone, was to listen to what the customers were asking for and observe the sort of evolution of modern styles of parenting and adapt to meet those needs. Also, the enormous, you know, surprise for us was the number of customers who, unbeknownst to us, were using the Go for their kids with special needs, because whether it was kids were in hip casts or kids with autism, a whole range of different special needs, which as a mum with kids who don't have special needs, I was largely unaware of this. And so we spoke, lots of customers got in touch with us to say, it's been fantastic for my kid. Now he or she is beginning to get too large for your range. Would you make a larger one? For about a year, I said, no, we don't make custom things. Absolutely not. It's not our thing. We're just on the under three market. That's what we do. And then I thought, actually, this is quite interesting. This might be a nice sort of offering. Perhaps we'll do a large range for special needs kids. And we'll see what happens. And we exhibited at a show, Kids North, a sort of special needs kids exhibition up in Manchester. We sold the whole lot by lunchtime. I was like, okay, so we're obviously onto something here. And from there, now half our business is the special needs market. We sell to adult wheelchair users as well. And there's been a fantastic response to our range of wheelchair cozies that don't look remotely medical. So we're sort of targeting kids, young adults, groovy grannies, as we call them, who don't want a tartan rug or a, you know, dull navy, burgundy, whatever. But that was entirely because I listened to our customers. I didn't knee-jerk it. I didn't listen to one and think, right, yeah, let's make it, because that would be ridiculous. But there was a definite trend. Quite hard to do market research on. There's very little information out there about how many kids or young adults there are in wheelchairs. So I had to kind of feel in the dark a bit. But yeah, it's been very rewarding, and we're very happy to have entered that alternative market.
Sounds like speaking to your customers and being in constant contact with your customers has been really important to you.
Yeah, absolutely vital. And that has been largely at by events, exhibiting at events. And we've really missed that in this last year with lockdown. Obviously, there have been no events at all, no exhibitions. And we've really noticed an absence of that. So we've had to make sure that we reach out on social media. We're always asking questions, asking customers feedback. It's really, really important for us. And even not even just with new ideas, but is our offering at the moment working? Is there anything wrong with what we sell? Are the instructions clear? You know, did it arrive on time? You know, it's really important to us that we look after customers. Their needs are being met, and we're always tweaking everything we do. Never a year or a month goes without us looking at what we're doing and fine-tuning it. But we do make mistakes. We have had a couple of duff offerings, which after a year we've had to quietly shelve. So we don't always get it right, but we try.
You know, nobody does. And at least you tried, and at least you gave it a go and stopped when you realised that it wasn't working for you.
Yeah, move on. Yeah. You can do all the market research in the world and still just not hit it on the head, not hit the nail on the head. But that's life. Learn from it, move on. Yeah.
It sounds like you've had to be really adaptable this past year to make sure that you're still in constant contact with your customers. I noticed that you said we a few times as well. So is there a team around you now?
The royal we. There is a very, very small micro team. Although, I mean, I'm very lucky in a way, although we have expanded hugely over the years, it is still largely me, but I have a fantastic team who are all self-employed. They're mostly working mums. They are pretty much all based at home. Well, certainly at the moment, they're all based at home. I have Natalie, who looks after all our customers. I have Sam, who does our marketing and sort of online advertising. I've got a fantastic lady who does the books for me. and we have a warehouse outsourcing. We've outsourced all the warehousing, and we have a fantastic crew there who look after all the stock and all the orders, and sending stuff out overseas and getting all the stuff, the stock in from overseas. So I've outsourced as much as I can, but I don't actually employ anybody. We're very lucky. We're a pretty nimble operation. But yes, the Royal We, it is largely me. I'm the only official member of the team, but I rely heavily on my wonderful network of helpers.
Thank you so much for sharing that, Emily. The reason I wanted to touch on that is I know that there will be people listening who are perhaps quite early into their businesses. And right at the outset, when you're doing everything yourself, it can seem a lot, it can seem quite overwhelming. And it's good to know that 10 years down the line that you are outsourcing some things and you are getting some help. And then that's definitely something that is possible.
It's a common issue. And I speak to lots of startups, and it's a really hard issue knowing when to make that leap. You know, it's quite an investment. Sort of hiring someone, and when you're especially in the first few years, you might not be earning a lot yourself, if anything, even at the start. You know, lots of people don't earn anything for the first year or two, so it can be slightly overwhelming to have someone else who's earning some money when you're still not, as the entrepreneur. I would, if anyone ever asks me for advice, I mean, outsourcing, the things you are worst at I would say is one of the best bits of advice I could offer anyone. You know, from day one, I outsourced the accounts. It's not my bag. I'm rubbish with numbers. I can do it if it's quite simple. I understand it and I'm quite logical. But I could no more file a VAT return than I could fly to the moon. And I outsourced that from day one, because I just knew it was going to take me hours of time I didn't have. Likewise, outsourcing customer service to Natalie has been the best thing I've done in recent years. It means the customers' needs are always being met. She is completely on it. I was just unable to do that as well as everything else. And I was beginning to miss emails. I wasn't looking after people as well as I wanted. And the minute I realised it wasn't happening, I outsourced it. I would say start by outsourcing the things you are worst at. And that's probably the things you hate are probably the things you're worst at. It's probably a wise investment. Warehousing as well. You know, don't queue up every day for 2 hours at the post office. If you're doing that, you've got to ask yourself a serious question. Look for some warehousing, outsource that.
Thank you for sharing that. That all makes so much sense. I mean, for myself, I know that two things I really dislike doing at the beginning were packing and walking to the post office. And I think at times as well, some of these tasks that we do can end up taking us away from other things where perhaps our time could be a bit better spent.
Yeah, I mean, also the thing I try to always make sure is that I do understand what everyone else is doing. So although, you know, everyone I work with are far better than me at what they are doing. Natalie is far better at looking after the customers than me. Sam knows far more about advertising than I do, and marketing and all that. Everyone is an expert in what area they are working in, obviously. Otherwise, you know, they would be, you know. But I always try and make sure I know exactly what they're up to every day. So if I lose any of them at any time, I can step in and look after them. That's been particularly useful in the last year, because with homeschool and all the various things we've all had to go through, there have been spells when members haven't been able to work efficiently, and I've had to step in and do all sorts of things. So I always make sure I understand what everyone's up to, because no member of the team is dispensable.
Thank you, Emily. Now, if you don't mind, I want to go right back to the beginning. So you mentioned that, first of all, with your product, you had something that you were sort of sewed yourself. How did you get from that to having a product ready to sell in large quantities? I think people find that really interesting, because yours wasn't a product that was sort of duplicate or very close to anything else on the market. It was completely original. So I think it'd be really interesting to hear some of the steps you went through, please.
Well, the first thing I'll say is it took a lot longer than I could have imagined. So do to anyone listening who is at the very, very early stage, don't rush it. Don't rush it. Take your time, because you can waste a lot of money and a lot of time by rushing it. And there are lots of pitfalls. We had a pretty clear idea of the product. I had done various sort of mock-ups and my husband had helped me, and we'd gone through various kind of ideas, and we pretty much knew what I wanted it to look like. We took it to a manufacturer in Wales who made a really good, and I went up there back in the day when you could just jump in the car and go and have a meeting with someone. They made the first 30 for me. And we took those to a trade show, and we got a lot of interest from various big high street retailers. And from that moment, we realised it wasn't going to work having them made one at a time or 20, 30 at a time. We needed these to be mass made, and we decided to go at that point into high street retail. We needed to lower our production cost to give us that margin to go into retail, and we needed to be able to make, you know, hundreds if not thousands at a time. So from there, we at that same event, I met a couple of other sort of industry colleagues, if you like, who are still very close friends of mine to this very day. And that would be another bit of advice I would say is network in your industry. Find people who think like you and work like you, and you can trust and help each other out, because that has been more important to me than anything else. So a couple of them, we stayed in touch and we spoke, and they recommended their agent who was getting things mass produced in China. So I had a UK-based agent who was manufacturing in China. So that's where we began. Actually, then 2 or 3 years after that, we found our own factory and our own agent who's based in Hong Kong, and we've been with them for the last 8 years, very happily. So we've gone down the route of having an agent who handles the liaison between us and the factory, because it is really complicated otherwise to communicate directly with a factory. Language is an issue, just endless misunderstandings. It's really hard to communicate exactly what you want. The factories are very good at replicating something, but they're not very good at interpreting, let's say, a plan or your words, a written description, a photograph. Things do get very easily lost in translation. So for us, an agent has been very, very useful. They speak English as a first language. I was able to Skype them, and they would then interpret that information and go make sure it was working fine at the factory. I've never been to the factory in China. That was the plan for this year. It remains to be seen whether I'm going to get there. So I've done it all with the help of an agent. Personally, I would recommend it. I know other people have gone straight to the factory. It obviously saves you some money. But for us, the agent's been a really good buffer, if you like, for product development, quality control, making sure all the stock gets here on time, getting it through customs, all of those things. Making sure they're all packaged correctly in the right cartons with the right labelling, with the right barcodes, all of that. It's a minefield. And unless you really know what you're up to, you can go badly wrong. So, I would recommend finding a trusted agent to help you. Sorry, I slightly forgot. I hope that's answered the question. Very long answer to possibly not even the question.
Thank you. That's really interesting to hear. I especially found it interesting hearing you talking about working with an agent. That's something that I've never done before. However, I guess that my products are, you know, they're very simple. They're straightforward. There's a lot less that could go wrong, I suppose. And I think for anyone listening, it's important to think about what it is that you're asking for. So what your product consists of, and whether you feel that's something you can communicate effectively on your own, or whether you feel like you may need a bit of help to make sure that the product you end up with is the one that, you know, that you anticipated, and it completely meets the spec that you have.
Agree. Absolutely not. You can't. What I've learned is you can't expect the manufacturers to have any innovative ideas. Or they won't offer you any recommendations on, look, if you did it this way, it would be easier, it'd be faster, it would cost less money. Have you thought about using this instead of that? There's none of that. Of course, when you're sitting at home in your office in the UK and they're out there, that's what you sort of need from them. But I didn't get any of that. So I needed the agent to sort of, to have that knowledge and that understanding. I mean, I guess the other thing is if you have the space, the time and the energy to go out there, I think it would be incredible. But when I started, obviously I had little ones, I couldn't leave them and I didn't have the money, apart from anything else, to go out there for a week or two at a time. Whereas now I'd love to go. But having said that, we do now have a luggage, a small luggage range, which we do liaise directly with the factory, because however many years down the line, I now sort of know the pitfalls. And that's actually working really well. And we also have a couple of ranges made in the UK, which is absolutely lovely. And again, in the ordinary way, I'd be able to jump in the car and go up, spend the day with them, looking and touching all the different things and working it out. Of course, now we're doing it all on Zoom, like everything. But it's really nice to have a range made in the UK. I can make less of something. It's quite good for testing out the market without having to go and make 1,000 of something. And it feels really nice to support UK manufacturing. So obviously it's more expensive, but it's been a nice thing to do, and I hope we'll be able to do more of it in the years to come. Yeah.
And was your plan from the outset to sell by retailers as well as selling directly on your website, or was that something that just evolved as time went on? Was retail always the plan?
No, not at all. I mean, it's been a bit of a roller coaster. And to be honest, right at the outset, it didn't even occur to me in a million years that I'd ever be stocked by a major high street retailer. I didn't really have a plan. I can't emphasize enough to anyone starting out how little of a clue I had. It was literally a kind of hobby idea. It was just a sort of note, something to fill the hours on maternity leave. Never thought I'd be here now. But when I exhibited at that trade event, I won a free stand, would you believe it? So it's the only reason I was there. And we got approached by quite a few high street retailers who said, oh, this is absolutely perfect. So I did literally kind of rewrite the business plan sort of on the hoof at that event. And we then kind of started all over again. We then went to mass manufacturing overseas. We looked at, again, the pricing. We realised, made sure we had enough margin to go into retail. And that's really where we started. So we did start by launching straight into a range of very well-known high street retailers. Fast forward 3 years, I realised there are actually massive negatives of being stopped by these retailers. We had difficulties meeting their sort of erratic orders. Suddenly out of nowhere, I'd get an order for 1,000 units, which I didn't have. And obviously manufacturing overseas has a pretty long lead time. They take a lot of margin. And as the world moved online and people started to buy more and more from retailers online and then more and more from Amazon and from our website, I sort of realised I'm not really sure I need them. I actually think I've got enough of a customer. I think the customers are quite happy to buy online from us, from our website. And slowly over the years, I have noticed our web orders go up, up and up. Amazon goes up every year exponentially. And we now only supply very special favourite retailers. They're either customers we've worked with for years and we like and we know them, or they're specialists in their field. So they are specialist sling wearing retailer who give customer advice, one-to-one advice. So that for us is really nice because we can't offer that. Or they're a specialist retailer for kids with special needs or whatever it is. So actually we've come away from high street retail in the UK, but we do still supply high street retailers in Europe through our network out there. So it's a bit of a mixed, it's been a roller coaster, But I think the world has moved online, especially in the last year. It has dramatically altered the landscape. And I don't necessarily think it's necessary to supply any retailers at all. Having said that, it's really nice to work with them because it does widen your reach.
Thank you for saying that. So was that first trade show your first step into retail, and did everything just sort of happen from there?
Yeah, it did. I was really lucky. It was a bit of a, it was a really lucky, lucky event. I met distributors, I met retailers, I met editors of national magazines, I mean, you name it. And I met industry colleagues who I'm still in touch with now. I mean, it really was a, it was a sort of amazing immersion, 3-day immersion. I did, and like I said, I won a free stand through a sort of entrepreneurs, rags to riches or something it was called. I've never been so nervous in my whole life. And I won this free stand, which is the only reason I was there. And I was in the worst spot upstairs at the far end. No one came in this dark little corner because I was on a free stand. So I quickly abandoned the stand and went wandering about and just started networking. And it was the best thing I could ever have done.
That's amazing. Thank you. And I would just love to know, from your point of view, do you still think it's worth attempting to get stocks in retailers? A lot of people are interested in that and do aspire to that. But obviously, a lot has changed for retail in the past year. So I'd love to know your thoughts on that, please.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it really depends what you sell. I think it really depends what you sell. That if you sell small items, you know, skincare or something, you're probably going to want to be in a supermarket, a pharmacy range, etc. But, you know, our things are just, I think they're just large enough to be something that you would research online and possibly order online. So for us, I think we are quite neatly, we're quite a neat online offering. Whereas for smaller items, it might be, a, you know, something where you spot it in the supermarket and you just lob it in your basket. I think it really depends what you sell. But obviously there are advantages, not just volume, which is a huge one, but I think it can add a cachet to your name if you are stocked in, you know, insert name of high street retailer. And definitely in the early years, it helped to give us credibility, which maybe now we don't need because we're more established.
Thank you. And I guess it also depends on your margins as well, because if your margins are really tight, obviously it might be something that just isn't viable for you.
The margins, absolutely. Also the volume of stock, you know, are you happy to hold however many units of stock in case you get a big order? You know, I found that really hard in the early years. You know, we would order a huge amount of stock and then we'd wait and just hope we got the orders because we had to have enough to be able to supply them at short notice. But we never knew when the orders were going to come. I found that incredibly stressful, and it put a big strain on us in terms of cash flow, which again in the early years is often where small companies come unstuck. So we did manage to ride the wave, but it did put us under a huge strain. And if I was to go back and do it all over again, I'm not sure I'd be so keen to leap, or certainly not with all of the big retailers all at once. But again, we had long lead times. They're quite expensive items to manufacture. So it was a big outlay. Every time we did an order, it was a huge outlay, you know, terrifying.
And how does it work with retailers typically, Emily? Is it that they pay you once you've delivered the order, in which case I guess it can be perhaps quite hard to manage your cash flow?
Very tricky. I mean, one of them used to pay 90 days at the end of the month in which they placed the order. So they would always place the order on the first of the month. So really you're looking at 120 days until you see a pound. And bear in mind, you've already had to pay up front for the stock coming from China, and then it's got a month at sea. So there could be 6 months, 7 months from your first outlay to even receiving the first first, you know, income. And that's hard. That's really hard. It was terrifying. And we very nearly came unstuck several times in the early years. And I would say that is probably when most startups do hit those hurdles. Yeah. Something to be aware of. Whereas with Amazon, you get the money. I think I get paid every 2 weeks. It's just lovely. I have to say, it's lovely. In it goes, pop, pop, pop. I never have to ask them for it. I never have to worry if their invoice is outstanding. It just, in it comes. And it's, it's lovely, I have to say.
And can you please tell us a few of the things that you love about running a products business?
Number one, I love being self-employed. I think I was probably a terrible person to employ. Apologies to all my former employers. I love being able to work my own hours. I probably work longer hours than I've ever done in my life, but I love being able to work around my kids, be able to take my dog for a walk. I love it. When the weather's nice, I go out and work in the garden. I absolutely cherish that so much. And it's one of the reasons why I'm very happy to have staff who work from home, because they can all work in the same way, and I know that they all love that as well. I absolutely love my customers. I know it sounds really naff, but I really, really love hearing from them. I love knowing that we have helped mum to get out and about for a walk with her newborn when she was tearing her hair out, or that a mum with a kid who's in a wheelchair was able to get out into the snow. Honestly, we get lovely messages, we get emails, we get pictures, and every single one makes me so happy. I just love what I come into work on a Monday morning. You know, I come into work, I walk the short distance from the kitchen to my office, and I never mind coming to work. In fact, in the holidays, if I ever take a holiday, I quite miss working and I quite look forward to coming to work. I love new ideas. Coming up with new fabrics is really good fun. I really like everyone I work with, so I'm always happy to pick up the phone to any one of my colleagues. Yeah, I feel very, very lucky. And all through lockdown, I never felt happier than to have a company that I, you know, to keep me employed and entertained. You know, it's my hobby as well as my work, so I'm one of those. No work life structure at all, it's just all one and the same.
That's really good though, and it sounds like things really are working for you.
Yeah, and I really miss the events. That's the thing I most miss through lockdown is meeting my customers. I absolutely love being out and about and speaking to people who already have a Bundlebean and they tell me all about it. That I've really, really missed that, being stuck at home. I do feel really lucky. I absolutely, honestly can say I love my job, and I can't think what else I would ever do. Sometimes I think about it, and the thought of going back to work for anyone else is far too awful. So I'm going to have to keep on forever, I think, until I retire.
I actually think, Emily, that you're the guest that I've had so far who has been doing this for the longest. And so it's really great to hear that you're still enjoying what you're doing, and also that you're still looking to develop new things. And the fact that you still see a lot of ahead of you as well, I think is really exciting.
I think it is. It took me longer than I could have anticipated to be comfortable in what I do. You know, again, if I'd known how stressful the first years were going to be, not sure, maybe no one would ever start their business if they knew what was ahead. But, you know, like I alluded to earlier with the retailers, there were some really, really stressful times when I'd look at the number of units I needed to fulfill orders for the coming 6 months. And I realized I didn't have the money in the bank to pay the deposit, let alone the full amount. So although it was a successful company, it was cash flow, sleepless nights. We've had issues with manufacturing where we've had, you know, 1,000 units are all wrong and we've had to recall products. And I mean, there have been some really, really stressful times, especially working when you've got a young family and, you know, all the rest of it, all the normal hurdles of life that we all have. But it's really nice having been going now for 10 and a half years, I can't believe it, is I'm now in a very comfortable, I feel very comfortable doing what I do. I sort of know, I've really learnt the ropes and it's lovely to be here, but it did take me quite a long while to get here. I don't know whether that's encouraging for your listeners or off-putting, but it's just the reality of it.
Well, thank you. I do really appreciate you sharing that. So I've just got a few questions before we finish up. I would love to know, what would your number one piece of advice be for other product creators?
Well, gosh, I could give advice for hours. I mean, I could host an entire talk show just imparting my advice, which no one probably wants to even listen to. I think, honestly, I mean, plan, rewrite the plan, rip up the plan, start again, write another plan. But actually, I think more important than that is outsourcing. I can't emphasize enough how important it is to get experts, find experts, find the people you really trust, see if you can get them to work on a reasonable hourly wage and outsource the stuff you are really bad at, because you cannot do it all yourself. Maybe not in the first year or two, but the minute you start to scale, start outsourcing, because you cannot scale without help. There is only so much any one human can ever do. Having said that, make sure you keep your company really lean. You know, don't suddenly hire someone on a massive wage. We are a very, very lean operation, and I'm thankful for that, because I never have to worry about my overheads. But outsource and just hire trusted, fabulous individuals. And not only will it help you in your working life, but also it's really nice to have other people to speak to on the phone or to come into the office when you're able to do that. You know, it's a really lonely old world otherwise, and it's really important to have a little network around you.
Thank you so much, Emily, for everything that you've shared today. Where is the best place for people to go and find you and find out about more about you and about your products?
www.bundlebean.com. New website launching in a month. That's what I'm working on this month. Although I've, as mentioned above, I've just outsourced it because I've realised I'm rubbish at building websites. So that's the best way to find out all about us.
Amazing, thank you. And when this episode goes live, your new website will be live, so I'll be sure to link to everything in the show notes as well, so people can go over and take a look.
Thank you. Thank you, Vicky.
Hi, thank you so much for listening. As always, I would absolutely love to know what you thought of this episode. Please do remember to rate and review the show, and also, most importantly, subscribe so you don't miss out on any future episodes. And as a reminder, I release a new episode every single Friday. So take care and look forward to speaking to you again then. Hi, this is just a little note. Say if you've enjoyed this episode, or indeed any of the episodes, and you would like to, I don't know, buy me a coffee or something, you can actually now leave tips. So there's a link to how to do this in the show note. Of course, do not feel obliged to do this. This is a free podcast. This will always be a free podcast. But as I say, if you want to buy me a coffee, you can do that via the link in the show notes.